Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Maybe the person who's listening to us right now will be on Mixergy at some point in the future and probably laugh at the fact that they've heard me say Freedom Fighters for years and years.
Years.
You know, I really do feel that entrepreneurs are the Freedom Fighters. When you think about how we are trapped at home, can't send our kids to school, these freaking entrepreneurs, I see them. They're thinking, how do I get school opened up? How do I do remote school? How do I create an app? They're just like, we're going to liberate you from all this stuff. Now, are they solving everything? No. Are they going to be the answer to every problem? Absolutely not. But when you think about giving the rest of the world freedoms, I think it's coming from entrepreneurs more than it is from anywhere else. Anyway, so joining me is an entrepreneur who's heard me do this forever. I'm glad that you're here. Vineet Devaya is the founder of Teleport.me. It's virtual tour software. Basically, tell me if I've got this right. I can use my phone to do like a 360 Google Street View type of photo where people could then see the photo as if they're standing in the same spot where I was. And if they move their phone up, they could look up the way that I might look up. If they move their phone down, or if they move to the right and left, it would be just like they're standing in my spot. Am I right?
Yes.
Does it work with Google Cardboard where I can put it? It does.
Yes.
So if I have that cardboard box that Google makes, I put my Android phone into it, I could see all the photos that are on Teleport.me as if I'm standing in the spot in virtual reality, essentially.
So that's pretty much what the basic functionality of our app does, yes.
And the revenue from it is?
I think last year, if all went good, we were tracking to about $500,000.
What do you mean if all went good? We're like 9 months into this year. Basically, what you're saying to me is roughly $500,000, right?
Yep. Yeah.
This year, though, post-COVID, what happened?
Well, post-COVID, things went south very quickly. We were really excited about 2020. We had kind of pivoted our business into a different sort of way, and we were excited about the growth. And then most of our revenue comes from in-app purchases, which is people who are traveling, they download our app and they hit, you know, upgrade and they get an upgrade. And people stop traveling. And so early February, March, our revenues went down 90%. And since then we've been trying to like kind of scramble, if you may.
And transition into what? Where do you think the next growth could be?
Well, you know, we are probably one of those few companies like Zoom where virtual tours are now hot, you know, because we've been trying to do this for 10 years and virtual tours are never hot. But now every real estate agent, every university, every construction site, they want virtual tours. We didn't have the actual virtual tour product. But if you go to teleportme.com/virtual tour, in early July, we launched the fastest virtual tour product. And it's been picking up, touchwood organically, like our Panorama app. You know, big companies are coming to us directly because we are the only product that has capture on the phone. And a lot of these large companies.
What you're saying is, in the past, somebody would go on vacation and want to show their family or keep for themselves a 360-degree photo or experience of where they stood when they were on vacation.
Right.
That was nice. What you're seeing is today, if somebody wants to rent an apartment or buy a house somewhere, they often can't go in there. And I'm noticing a lot of real estate brokers that we were looking at, they either wouldn't allow us to go look until we signed an agreement that said that we wouldn't sue them if we got COVID and we made all these other provisions to make them feel comfortable, or they would just say, look, just take a look at this virtual tour that we've got and it would be some kind of whacked out video. They're still not great at it. And so you're saying your product could allow people to have this virtual tour experience where they basically are walking through a home. They could turn around and look and see where it is, go from the living room to the kitchen, see what the kitchen,
exactly.
See what the living room
exactly.
Looks like from the kitchen, so on. Got it. That's what it is. Okay. So that's the future that you think, but it's still early. It's still very early, yes. So let me ask you this blunt question. Why did you suggest an interview now? Why not wait till this thing works itself out and deal with this headache? What's up?
Well, I just thought that, you know, in my entrepreneur, like I said, I've been listening to you forever. And I think you also know, because we have exchanged messages many times. And, you know, I just think that like entrepreneurship comes in cycles. And I just saw the cycle repeat again. And I just thought, you know what, this is a time where I can go on Mixergy and be like, not be one of those founders that is really early and hasn't been through kind of, you know how when you find a growth trajectory, you're like, this is the way to do it. Yes. Email marketing, that's the way you grow a $1 billion business, you know? And so that's just not how things work. And I've been through a couple of these phases and I just felt like I've done 10 years, I put in my work, I've done good work.
But you're at a difficult moment, willing to be open about it, and you successes over the years that you want to talk about. And you have one that you don't want me to talk about, this company that you sold for $1 million. We'll see if we can bring that up a little bit later on, though. So why aren't you freaking out? Why are you laughing so much? Why are you laughing so much? Why aren't you freaking out? Why? I have to tell you, I woke up in the middle of the night last night going, holy moly, I had ClickFunnels sponsorship. I failed them. They didn't work out. I didn't get them the orders that they wanted. I'm trying to figure out what do I do to make that up. That's keeping me up at night. And it doesn't worry them. I talk to ClickFunnels. They go, Andrew, we take a risk on ads. That's the way it is. We accept it. I'm up nights worried about it. They're not. Why is it that your business got knocked out 90% and you're not worried?
I think it's just a personality trait.
You're always just comfortable where you are? You're always happy?
Most of the times, yeah. I mean, I think maybe in my life, there are like maybe two or three times where it really like hit me.
Okay, talk about openly about one of the times that it hit you as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, as an entrepreneur, there's one 10-day phase where I can remember. All right. So basically, this is 2017. We had invested all our money into VR. VR crashed. We were literally broke. There's no money in the bank. I had no money. I was stuck in Luxembourg on a visa problem. We were going through a program in Luxembourg where the government was willing to give us about 100,000 euros. So that was like our bridge money, but it wasn't coming in. And I couldn't leave the country because my visa had not come out. And I remember specifically for 10 days, I couldn't sleep. I generally sleep very peacefully. I couldn't sleep for 10 days. And I remember calling a friend of mine and said, like, man, I now know what people feel when they're depressed. Because I used to always think, like, why do people be depressed? And then I just, for 10 days, at my time, maybe like a week, it was really, really difficult because I really had no answers. It was probably one of the toughest times where, you know, when you can't leave a country, when you can't do anything, it just becomes very difficult to do, like make any kind of plans. I was just sitting and waiting for the government of Luxembourg to approve my visa because I was in the middle. I was in the transition. Like I couldn't leave till they approved it. And I couldn't go get more money. I couldn't meet my team. I couldn't do anything. So I was just kind of stuck.
This feeling of helplessness.
Extreme helplessness, yeah.
Okay, so now you're not depressed because you're not feeling helpless because you feel like I have this new thing. I believe that people need it now more than ever. I could pull it off. And your mind just goes into, don't be upset. Don't feel bad for yourself. Just pull off this virtual tour thing. And if not that, then the next thing.
Then the next thing, yeah.
What happened with the government of Luxembourg? Did they end up paying for VR? They did. Yep. So they paid you $100,000 to do
Euros.
Virtual reality?
Euros
to do virtual, yeah. Even better, to do virtual reality software? To do what for them?
It was a program where it's kind of like an accelerator program, equity-free program that they would give to attract entrepreneurs to Luxembourg. And like I said, we were in a really, really bad spot. So that money came at the right time. It's just that there was a gap and it was kind of bad. And I have to give credit to my team there where they did not leave the company. That's what solved the problem. If they would have left the company.
They kept on working and eventually you did get the money. And so you were able to pay them their back pay, even though you missed a little bit of payment. Let's go back and understand you.
Okay.
You were born where?
India, Goa, India.
What was that like?
It was great. It was, I think that's one of the reasons the way I am, because Goa is kind of like a beach town. And so everybody, you know, even my friends today, my closest friends, they have a day job, which is not very taxing. And then they go back and then they fish and then they, you know, eat rice and fish and, you know, they chill and they play with their kids. And
They just go fish for themselves. They eat the fish. They do their day job. They play with their kids. I had a problem like that with San Diego. I went to San Diego just to experience it. I liked how small town it felt. I liked how it was very beachy. But dude, everyone was walking around in flip-flops. Even people at work were walking around in flip-flops. They were so casual. They couldn't wait to go surf the next day. I said, I could really enjoy it, but it won't make me angry. And if I don't have a little bit of anger in me, a little bit of fire, I'm not going to do any work. I'm just going to start to, as you said, I'm going to chill. And I'm going to be the nicest person. Everyone's going to like being around me. But I'll look back 5 years on my life in San Diego and think, what happened? Where did those 5 years go? All I have to show for it is happiness. And that's not enough for me.
I forgot her name, but I was telling the person that does the
pre-Ari, our producer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I told her that I remember how anxious you used to be in your first interviews. You're like, give me the answer. Tell me what the answer is, you know? And, you know, you used to be, I mean, now you're calmed down a little bit compared to how you were before.
You know what did it for me? It was being at South by Southwest, and all of my guests at the live event thought we were fighting and hated me. It was like Zay Frank, who eventually ended up running BuzzFeed's video division. He said at the end, I said, thank you for doing it. He goes, you don't know that we were arguing up there that I don't like you. I don't know that he said exactly I don't like you, but I realized, oh, right. I was pushing him for more details than he's comfortable with because he's more of an artist. He's not thinking about the day to day, step by step. He's creating. Yeah. And then one of my best memories of that is Gary Vaynerchuk. I said, tell me how you come up with the things you do. He goes, what do you mean? And we went on for like 10 minutes like this. And I said, for example, I see you walking around South by Southwest. You're giving people these wristbands, these sweatbands that all the bartenders have, all the waiters have, all the people who walk around, they have it. The design that looks like kind of a wine glass, kind of like a sperm, like he's going to impregnate you with his passion for wine. It was just a beautiful logo that also had a little bit of edge to it. I said, how did you come up with it? He goes, I don't know. It just happens. I go, how? I don't know. He goes, how do you even think about a wristband that's red? He goes, finally, after saying, I don't know, for 5 minutes, he said, well, actually, Andrew, what happened was I had a wristband on while I was drinking wine, and then I just needed to wipe my mouth. And so I wiped it on the wristband and I said, hey, that's a great idea. And I realized he wasn't lying, but he was just like, I got to get this idiot off of my back. So I'll say something. And that's when I understood there's some things in life you push too far and you end up getting something bad. It's not always good to be so determined. Anyway, so yeah, I'm chilling out a little bit more. I'm still not San Diego chill. I'm still not Goa chill, but I get now where you come from.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about this company that you created?
Yeah.
Okay. So the company, from what I understand, happened because you had a computer in the 90s when most people didn't have computers.
Yes. My dad had a computer in his office.
How?
No, I didn't have a computer. We were too broke for that, but my dad had a computer in the office. So I would go to his office in the weekends to play games. And then, you know, from there, it kind of evolved into what can I do more? And then he just said, stop playing games, learn something. And so I started to program. And then the computer he had at his office was not powerful enough to run any of the computational stuff I wanted to do. And so he sent me to Antarctica Research Center, which was the closest kind of research center that had powerful computers. I don't even remember what computers they were, because they were like these big blocks. They weren't like small computers. The big blocks connected to a monitor. And so, I learned how to, I just did normal C, basic stuff.
Wait, so they just gave this Antarctic Study Center, they just had computers for kids who wanted to learn, some connection to them?
I had my dad's friend kind of worked in that place, and also his daughter was, this is too much information, but his daughter was they went to the same school as me. So
got it. So it was a friend of the family, a friend of yours, had some kind of connection there, and so you were able to go use their computer. And you were a teenager, you were teaching yourself to program, and so you start learning, and they have access to weather data there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all they do, yeah. They collect weather data. And they have these study centers all across the world. And so they collect at each part, they collect weather data and they compile it and they're kind of like running studies. So that's kind of what they do.
And so you said, let me see what I could do with this data. What did you do with it?
I didn't do much. So that's my point. So that's why I don't like talking about it, because it's not that, it's not in millennial words, it's not that deep. It's basically I took a bunch of data, like 60 or 70 years of prior data, and then I kind of averaged them out on a daily basis, so that if you built a chart and you extrapolated it to any further day, it would give you an approximate date of approximate understanding of what the temperature and the, it was just fancy for its time. And I used C++, which was a graphing programming language, to build these graphs that looked really nice. And so it was kind of like a high school project that it was very well received, and there was a market for it, an opportunistic market, where a company that thought, that felt like this was a way for them to get into, like we discussed, into kind of the Indian agricultural space, decided to acquire it. That's pretty much it. It wasn't like a,
it seems like it's kind of like the Farmer's Almanac, where people used to years ago get really excited about the idea that you can buy this book that based on historical weather conditions
would
help
yeah.
farmers figure out what the future weather was going to be.
Yep.
But where they were basing it on years of past data, you were basing it on days of more recent past
yes.
data.
Yes.
Okay. You put it on floppy disks.
Yep.
The government of India. The government of Goa bought this from you to make available to farmers?
They just took it from you, made it
available to farmers. Infosys, this major tech company,
yep.
comes to you.
At that time, they were not major.
They
were small. No, it's 1999.
Okay. And so they came to you and they said, we want to buy this from you.
Well, what happened was they were a service provider, an IT service provider. And once the government of Karnataka wanted also to implement, because Karnataka and Goa are neighboring states, and, I don't know how they heard that there is this software in Goa that helps people. So the government of Karnataka contacted Infosys and said, can you get this software to us? So they came to us saying, oh, we want to take it to, they were IT services. They weren't even a software company at that point. And so they saw it, and then they had a client that they wanted to attract. And so to attract that client, they had to own the IP to be called. So they renamed the software as Infosys software. And so for that, they paid us $1.5 million at that time.
$1.5
million? Yeah.
Paid us, meaning you or you and your dad?
My dad, yeah.
What happened to the money?
I gave it to charity.
What?
See, this is why I didn't want to talk about it. Because then it's just going to go. It's not.
What do you mean you give it to charity? You're a guy who couldn't afford a computer. You're now giving away money to charity like Bill Gates? What is this?
This is why I told you we should not talk about it, because I knew this would be your reaction. Like, you give money to somebody else.
Okay, go
ahead.
Well,
I'll tell you the story. I mean, it's just going to derail. I mean, you're going to edit it, right? You're going to like cut it.
I'm not editing it, and there's no derailing. It's not like there's a rail going somewhere. I've already forgotten to introduce the advertiser in the beginning of this interview, so there's no rail. Go on.
All right. So
I'm living in California, where it's literally red. Actually, it started out as dark at 9 o'clock in the morning. It went to red. It went to light orange. Now we're seeing yellow. The world's going to end any minute anyway. I might as well go. Where you want to go?
Go ahead.
I literally can't open up first of all, I'm not in my office, which stinks because of COVID. I'm now at home, which I hate. My earpiece is popping out all the time. I don't know why that's happening here. And I literally can't open up the window because it's either going to smoke or COVID will come through the air or God knows what's next. So go ahead. Tell me, why did you donate the money? What's the deal here?
Well, so my dad died. So that's the sad part. We were in the process of closing the deal, and we closed the deal. And my dad was diagnosed with cancer a year back. And so he was really sick. So he really couldn't do much in terms of closing the deal. Deal got closed. The money got wired. But then he died in like a month, that, and he died of cancer. It really affected me a lot. And the cancer research center that my dad was admitted in, I went up to them and said, I really want this. I say it, I feel like stupid, but I really want this disease to go. I have this money. I didn't have authorization because it was my dad and another guy. And I went to him and said, I want all this money to go for cancer research. And then since then, after that, I stopped programming and I started working towards curing cancer. That's why I did chemical engineering and biomedical engineering after that. I got into a PhD program at MIT. So I was
so sad about your dad's death.
No, I wasn't sad. I mean, I was sad. All right. I was sad. But for me, cancer was and still is something that I'm passionate about getting rid of. I think it is one of those diseases where it really is, you know, it's one of those things that cannot be avoided. Like, you could be the most healthiest person in the world and still get cancer. So it's just one of those things that I'm deeply passionate about. I spent 8 years of my life pursuing it, only to realize that as a researcher, I would not be able to affect the cure of cancer too well. So the next best strategy was to get rich enough to fund cancer research.
So wait, are you still motivated by wanting to cure cancer or make enough money to help out?
Yeah, for sure.
You are? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me where the idea for Teleport Me came from. What was the original name?
Phototour.
Where did the original idea come from?
Well, the idea actually came off from our initial product, Bits 360. This was a product my co-founder had started back in school, and we just decided to work together. So we were working on like four different ideas. One was a portal for people to ask examination questions. One was kind of a Zoom co-sharing thing back in the day. And the other was Bits 360, where we had already a made product in Bits 360, which was a virtual tour product, a panoramic virtual tour product. And the idea was I'm going to sell that product. And with that money, we are going to fund the development of the other projects we had and see what takes off. So that's how we started building it. And then, you know, I just kind of got passionate about the idea of building the, what today they call the mirror world, which is the digital replica of the real world. It sounds okay now, but back in 2011, it sounded crazy. You know, we would tell people, we are building the digital replica, and they'd be like, oh. that's what we wanted to do. So our initial first product was Phototour, where we scraped millions and millions of geotagged images, and we tried to build a street view out of it. So we said, so our basic thesis was there is going to be a world where augmented reality and virtual reality is how you are going to conduct computing. That is, you are going to interface with the world through some kind of device. That's, you know, just to put in context, now that there is a device, at that time there was no device, that device now is kind of like a Google Glass or an Apple Glass kind of device. And we went there, and if you look at our old slides, it would be, you know, we would show Flickr, Instagram, Teleport Me, you know, kind of like. So it was
this belief that just like people used to take pictures and post it on Flickr and Instagram, you believe at some point they're going to want to take photos of experiences that are bigger than just this square or this rectangle. And you are going to be the social platform for them to be able to share those photos.
Right. Okay. But the bigger idea behind that was there is going to be a computation layer that is going to work through your eyes, which Mr. Elon Musk calls Neuralink now, right? It's the same thing.
That's good. Isn't that working through your brain?
It is working through your brain, but the highest input is through your eyes. Like, your eyes are the most largest sensors in your body. You consume the most amount of data through your eyes. And so with that kind of in perspective, think of it as Google Street View has mapped the world with, you know, the streets of the world. But it is literally impossible for you to map everything indoors. So if you have a computation layer that works only outside your house, it's not going to be good enough. So you want it to extend inside your house, inside buildings, inside places where you can use an AR glass, where you can use augmented reality using your phone, where your phone can detect where you are. This is a, you know, just basically it's a detection through a device inside your house. And we thought that the best way to do that is two things. One is have user-generated content and give people the ability to say, this is my house and I own the augmented reality experience of this house, which unfortunately is going away because Facebook is probably going to take that away from people. That one part.
So like, if why would somebody want to have a fake version or video version of their house? What was that thinking?
Well, it's because you want to make augmented reality extremely, extremely good, right? For example, if you're sitting in the room right now and you're wearing a Google Glass device, your Google Glass needs to know what you're looking at, where you're looking at, and in which direction you're looking at. So unless it has a mirror replica of your room, it's impossible for, I mean, it's possible to tell where you are. It is possible to say which direction you're looking at, but it's impossible to say what you're looking at, where you're looking at, and which direction you're looking at if there is no
map of it.
So
got it. And just like Street View created the map of the outside world, you wanted people to create the map of the inside world. Yeah. And the bonus for them for doing it is they would have a better experience with whatever product came out in the future, Google Glass,
exactly,
or Apple Glass, if they decide to come up with it or whatever it is.
Right.
That was your original idea. You launched it. What happened? Right.
Well, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't a bad launch. I think from a launch perspective, we were very successful. We skyrocketed onto the Android charts. We were a featured app, and we were probably the first app out of India to ever get featured on the international Google Play Store. And you know, we were one of the first companies out of India to get funded in the Valley through an accelerator. So we did a lot of firsts. I mean, I was the first Indian founder to be on TechCrunch in an interview with Sarah Lacey and Paul Carr. Shout out to the OGs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of firsts. 2011 to 12 and even early 13, we were killing it in our space. And then kind of reality hit. You know, it's just it's difficult to build a business around panoramas because people don't use it every day. And any consumer product that's not used every day is very difficult to monetize, difficult to retain. Retention is a problem. And so all of these things kind of just fell on. And then we decided to then.
Well, you continue with what happens, but I'm looking at the article from TechCrunch. First of all, the thing that strikes me is you're cracking up even in the photo on TechCrunch. Look at that. Sorry to see, but you're like not just happy to be there, but you're just cracking up. Number one. Number two, the company was phototour.in.
Yep.
Number three thing that stands out is you came, they say, to the Valley to collect emergency company award from NVIDIA. What's the emergency company award?
Not emergency. I think it was emerging.
Oh, emerging. Ah, got it. Okay. I misread it. All right. The Emerging Company Award from NVIDIA. What is that?
From NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
What is it? What's the award? What did you
do? Well, basically what we were doing is we were using GPUs on the server, which was never done before at that point. Like NVIDIA was trying to push GPUs and they wanted to push companies that were using GPUs. So that's how like early we were in the stuff it did, right? And they had to find a company in India, a bunch of three people that were basically routing all the images that we had into a server in our desktop in India to stitch. I mean, we were doing crazy shit at that time, and they noticed it. You know, we kind of sent, like, I think we went to their forums and we're like, we have this problem, we really don't know how to fix it. And they were like, you are doing this? Really? Are you sure? You're like, yeah, that's what we're doing. Can you help us out?
And so why did they say that? Why were they so incredulous?
Well, it was hacky at best. You know, basically what we were doing is we had a web server, people would upload photos, it would come, we had a GPU in our desktop at home, it would come onto the GPU. So it was kind of like a GPU server, but not really a GPU. So it was like, it was a total hacky system at that point.
Okay, you know, so to a computer at your house. That's the way it worked.
Noida, yeah. Bhagirathi Apartments. Shout out to Siddharth, if he's listening to this podcast, who did it.
Okay, so this is what you had. You got money from 500 startups.
Yep.
How much money did they give you?
They had their basic deal, accelerator terms. I don't remember.
I forget what it was. It was like 25,000?
Yeah, it was very little. I think it's like 15. Money. Yeah, it was 15,000, I think. It was 15,000 and then plus then like 40,000 because we were doing really well. We had metrics, so they added 40 on top of it. And then, so our initial raise was about 400K.
Okay, impressive. What didn't work about this?
Nothing. Nothing worked.
Nothing worked. Nothing worked. Software wasn't great. People didn't love it. Why didn't people want to?
No. That stuff worked. But
people
from
did want to share.
Yeah. All that stuff worked, but it wasn't a viral sensation. You know, Instagram. Yeah. Because the thing was, when we started off, we were really, really good. But then Instagram came and they changed the metrics of what virality meant. And so by the time we kind of reached there, we were like, oh, but you're not as viral as Instagram. And then we said, oh, yeah, we are not, you know. And so it kind of just, So it really hurt us at that point. And then I think, you know, we realized that the business wasn't there. I think all of us knew. I think that's one of the reasons my co-founder kind of also left. There was no business. There was, you know, we had this vision. We had a technology vision. We had a big goal, big idea, but there was no business around it. There was no user behavior around it. And it was very, very obvious.
Okay, but here's what did work. The software worked.
Yes.
Well, the ability to do Street View was done using multiple cameras on a ball, right?
Yep.
You guys did it on an Android phone, which often was pretty crappy. What did Google think about that when they saw that you did it?
I know what you're leading to.
Now you know my process.
He's like, what did Google think about it?
For people who don't know, what's happening is I've got a producer, Ari, who pre-interviewed him. And frankly, we do that and I have notes also. And what I try to do is guide my guests towards the direction that I want to talk about next without jumping in and saying it for you. So what I'm trying to get you to is they saw that. They were impressed that you were able to do this on Android phones. Some of the Android phones at the time were pretty bad. They said, how did you do it? And more importantly, they said, we want to buy you.
Yes.
Do you remember that day when they wanted to buy you?
Mm-hmm. It was a shock. I mean, I think they invited us to the Google campus and they said, oh, we really love what you're doing. We would like to know how you're doing. And so we were really excited. You know, we were just sitting in a small apartment in Noida. And we were really excited about it. We went for the meeting and then we had like all these people from the camera team and they were asking us questions and we were like, should we be telling you all of this stuff? We were not sure. And then my team was really, they really wanted to share the amazing stuff they did. And suddenly I realized, you know, this is probably not what I think it is, you know? And so I just said, I think, you know, we shouldn't be disclosing what we did in this meeting. And, you know, if you have any other questions about distribution and how to get on the Play Store, we would love to do that. And,
ask them if they have any questions for you about how you got on the Play Store.
I don't know. I mean, I was trying to like not, because they had three camera, like open CV camera guys, that were on video call. Like they weren't even in the office, but they had to, like, they wanted to talk to us.
Got it. This was your way of saying, look, I'll talk about some things, but I don't want to tell you how we were able to do this Street View on a phone. Got it.
At that point, they didn't have the Photosphere. They were working on the Photosphere product. They didn't even have the Photosphere.
What did they have? The Photosphere is the ball that has all the cameras on it.
No. Google has their own app to take a panorama.
Got it.
They didn't have that yet. So Android as a phone did not have panorama feature. It just so that's why we were so big, because, you know, we had the panorama feature, so they didn't even have that. So they were trying to build it out.
How did you create it before we get back into?
I have no idea, man. You got to ask my teammates who are not at my team right now. But I have no idea how they did it. We have no idea how we did it. It's just a lot of hard work and just wanting to do it. Even now that I think about it. It was like we had a borrowed Android phone And yeah, it was because we were broke.
Why'd you have a borrowed Android phone?
Well, because we're in India, that stuff is expensive, you know. So we had.
Got it. Wow. All right. So yeah. They're asking all these questions. It finally turns from curiosity to why don't we just acquire them? How much do they offer you for the business?
Well, it was a offer of number of users multiplied by $2 or $3 and 500K for the founders. And I think like 300K per employee, something like that. So it came up to about
500K for all the founders or for each?
Each founder.
Come out to about how much?
I think it came up to about like maybe 12 or 15 million, something like that.
And you said no?
Yeah.
Why?
I told you, man, this is the thing. Like, these are answers. I think there is no logical answer to it. You know, any
sure
business.
Sure there is. Because you hear a lot about Mark Zuckerberg being offered $1 billion by Yahoo. And then you could see Peter Thiel saying, we talked about it, but we talked about it very quickly in a board meeting because we knew that we were going to be even bigger. We weren't taking it seriously, right? You can hear the rationale behind companies saying yes or no. You know what your rationale is, or maybe this is an opportunity for you to discover it, but you should know why you said no.
I know why I said no. But then if I say it, then you're going to be like, that is the, you know, but basically I think for us, it was, for me personally, I think, the idea was we started the journey of entrepreneurship to build something phenomenal, like, and selling to Google would not be that. That's it.
You had a vision of doing something much bigger than this.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I get that. I had an opportunity once to sell my greeting card business for $7,500 million. I forget the number, but I still have the paper somewhere because I wanted to be so much bigger than that, that the paper would seem laughable. Then when I wasn't doing very well, I said, what the hell did I do? And that was a symbol of, hey, Andrew, you've got to just wake up and like recognize that $1 million is worth something and 75 is worth a whole lot.
Yeah.
I was basically mourning it years later. Did you ever get to a point where you said, no, never got to a point where you said, why did I do this? Why did I make that mistake? No?
No.
Okay. Because? Because this stuff just doesn't bother you.
It doesn't bother me, man. It really doesn't. You know, there were several opportunities after that also to sell. I mean, we recently had an acquisition offer from a large real estate company. Like I said, I was talking to a customer today and he said, they said, would you be interested in acquisition? And I said, no, because the only reason we want to do this, we either be really big or we vanquish like battered soldiers, you know, like we want to get out of it. Either dead,
take the hill or die.
Yeah, that's it.
Or die trying.
There's no rationale to it. It's kind of a romantic way of living, and okay. You know, if the outcome is money, then money can be made anytime.
Okay, so you didn't. You continued creating
it.
You turned it from this social network around immersive photos into what? What was next for the business?
Well, I think at that time, we got into a program in Chile, called Startup Chile. Yeah. So we moved to Chile, the entire team to move to Chile. And that's when I decided that we are not going down the venture capital round. I think we realized that as much as I would want, to build a large company, I wanted to do it on my terms. I realized that, there is a certain kissing the ring kind of thing with the VC world, where it's not very meritocratic, where there is a little bit of I'm sure you're in San Francisco, you know what I'm talking about, and I'm just not that kind of guy. And so I said, okay, how do we get to a stage where we are building phenomenal products, technology products, and we are also being sustainable? So we went down the path from there on, from 2014, to be a sustainable revenue generating company. So we did that. We were able to generate revenue. We were able to raise some seed fund, not seed fund, but like equity equity-free money from Startup Chile, from Parallel 18, these great programs. And we were doing really well till VR became really big. And so we then launched a product for delivering VR experiences, which got a lot of attention when VR was getting big. You know, we ran ads for some large companies. We, at that point, from a views perspective in VR or in 360 videos, 360 space, we are, I think, third or fourth largest. It was Facebook, Google, and us.
What do you mean? You were what type of VR experience were you selling?
So if you go to our app, you'll see that we have a lot of 360 videos in our app. And okay. So at that point, people were trying to say 360 videos, that people were trying to distribute 360 content. So I don't know if you remember, but New York Times and Samsung, all these people were doing news and 360 videos because VR was very hyped up at that point. There were companies that had raised $100 million. It's on the Explore page if you're looking at it.
Okay. So companies were willing to pay you to
distribute that content and also to use our technology to distribute videos on their sites.
How did you get them?
I emailed them.
Okay.
You know, I'm like, obviously a warm intro. I mean, I would go on LinkedIn, find someone who's connected to them, you know, kind of hound them. you just got to do what you got to do. Yeah. I mean, I'll take you back to this. This is a good story. I'll tell you a good story. All right. So I was working. So after I graduated out of Cornell, after I quit my PhD at MIT, I joined a company called TerraCycle. I don't know if the founder has been on your show, but TerraCycle
he
is.
He was, remember. Yeah, Zach.
He was?
Tom
oh,
Zaki.
Shit.
Yeah.
Tom Zaki. Oh, man. Tom Zaki, that guy. So I worked at TerraCycle. Do you have something to say about him? Because you remember,
I had this interesting experience where someone was coming after me, and I went to Tom Zaki, and he got really protective of me, and so he introduced me to his lawyer, and his lawyer said, "Hang on, Tom is a little bit too protective here. Let's talk rationally here." But he was really a good person. I wish I'd reached out to him sooner when I had the issue. His whole thing is, I can't talk about it. I hate saying I can't talk about it, but it was someone who sued
me. Give me a range, Andrew. Give me a range.
The range was, seriously, the range was like a few $1,000, less than five, maybe a few hundred. But it was, you can't start suing me. I got all angry about it, really seriously angry about it. And then the only person who was angry about me getting sued was Tom Zaki. He got angrier about it than I was. So we just go back. I'm still back and forth with this person over nothing, but I refuse to give in for a few hundred bucks. I got the fighting for this.
Was this on the podcast?
No, it was on.
No, this is part. This is your podcast wasn't there, I think.
I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you exactly what it is.
All right.
I took a photo. He sent me a photo of himself once the interview was done. I posted it on the site. Somehow somebody else's photo of him was on my site. I don't know how. I acknowledge that I could have made a mistake. A contractor could have made a mistake. I don't know if it was me. I don't post anything. I just don't want to take that. I don't want to I don't want to shove the blame somewhere else. I acknowledge it's my fault if it was on. I don't even know how he could even have gotten on. Anyway, I get sued for this freaking thing. I say, this seems ridiculous. I'm not making money off of this. It's clearly a mistake. And the guy, anyway, we go back and forth. The only person angry on my behalf is Tom Zaki. So I appreciate it. But I kept going and fighting on it myself, and I'll continue to fight till I die. I think about it. Or maybe I'll have a rational moment and go, Andrew, this is not you don't need to fight everything. And I should say, for people who are listening, the beautiful thing about Tom Zaki is he said, look, I want to see a world where people recycle. Right. And more importantly than recycle is where you break apart old stuff and you
upcycle
the material into something. He wants upcycle, where you take old containers and you make new things out of them, like new bags and so on. It's better. Anyway, that's his thing. And he said, no one's going to care about my mission to save the world and the environment unless I make a product that's better for them than the thing that hurts the environment. They're not going to buy because it's from purity of heart. They're going to buy because it's a better product. I respect so much of what he said. You worked for him. Continue with your story. Just diverted us. And by the way, it helps to ask a question a couple of times, because I started off by saying, I'm not going to tell you. I can't talk about it. It's a lawsuit, whatever. And then you asked, it comes out. So
this is I've been listening to all your interviews. I know exactly what to ask, man.
Oh, these techniques are good. I got better ones. I'll share with you in private one time.
All right. So I went to work. Basically, I was I went to a program at MIT, and Tom Zaki came to speak in there, and I told him that his company was a PR sham. And he's like, "Oh, do you want a job?" I said, "Yes." And so I went to work in his company as a BD guy. And till then, I was purely a technology guy. I was a nerd. I wouldn't say a nerd, but I was all, like, I was, I think, more into engineering and biology and chemistry than actually making any sales, talking to customers, anything like that. And he hired me to be the assistant to the CEO. And okay. I said, okay, I'll be. I mean, he's a phenomenal guy. Like, he's, you know, I don't work at his company anymore, but I love my time there, and so much to learn from him. Like, the way he pitches, he's an excellent, excellent sales guy. And so I would just sit in his room all day listening to him pitch. And then one day he just takes his entire folder and he just gives it to me. And it's like, "This is yours now." I was like, "Yeah, you take care of all the leads and you run with them. And I'm going to be CEO now." So I was like, "Okay." And so I became the main BD guy for TerraCycle.
And that's how you learned later on how to do business development, BD for your own business. Got it.
Right. So
can I ask you something that's a little bit, you know me well enough that you won't be hurt by this.
Okay.
You have a little bit of an accent. When you're calling people up, don't give me those
eyes. Right. So that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
When
I was
going to
tell
people up. Go ahead. Yeah.
So that's what I was, that's where the story was going to go.
Okay.
So I sucked at it big time. I wasn't making any progress for 2 months. I couldn't close a deal. And then Tom comes once into my cabin. It's like, "Yo, you got to close deals or I got to let you go." I was like, "Oh, fuck, shit." So I go to the Walmart, I buy a phone, I buy a mirror, and I put a mirror in front of me, and I keep a fake phone. Because at that time, you didn't have, like, cell phones. You had, like, a physical phone, you know. And all I would do is pick up the phone and, like, because I started reading books about, like, how you need to smile when you're talking so that it feels, I mean, all that. As an engineering graduate, you don't learn those things, right? And so... And I went from being absolute trash in my job to closing, I think, like $35, $40 million worth deals. Like, even today, the biggest deals TerraCycle runs are deals I closed with Unilever and Coca-Cola and all these.
Give me an example of one.
Man, okay, I'll give you a good one.
Don't give me the name of the company to keep it private for him, but tell me the type of company and the type of deal.
It's a company that does a product that has to do with milk.
Okay, and then what do you guys do?
They run campaigns in schools. It's a very famous campaign.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And so what did you do? This is where they collect the milk cartons, right? And they turn it into something. And did you work out the deal with the schools?
No, what happened was this lady shows up at the TerraCycle headquarters with a bag of, like, cartons of milk.
And said,
Can you do something with this? Oh, he said this solution. He said, can you do something with this? And I was like, I mean, I wasn't there. This other guy who found it gets her in and we start talking. I start talking to her. I was like, "Okay, what do you do?" She's like, I'm an administrator. So she was really passionate. So using her passion, you know, I went to, like, the district, and then I kind of, like, moved up to get the main people and close the deal. So I don't really remember, it's 2009, but I remember that story.
You guys then partnered up with the school system.
Yes.
To have them collect these containers for you, these milk containers, and then TerraCycle use them to create new products. Yep. Got it. Okay. So what you're saying to me is the reason that you got good at business development is because he forced you to, you watched him do it. And then to me, more significantly, you got yourself a mirror and a phone and you just practice to yourself over and over and over again.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. I'm with you. So that's how you were able to do all these deals. These deals eventually, your business transitioned away from those deals to a software that anyone could use with an upsell. How did you transition to that? What happened?
Well, when we decided, so basically VR crashed. And what we were doing at that point was we had signed up deals with some large companies that would amount to about $1.2 million if these deals would go through. So basically we had trials and post-trial, this was the pricing and all of that stuff was there. So we took the brunt of the cost for the trials because we ran the servers and servers are expensive. So we started whatever money we had saved up all these years, I think from like 2014 to around 2016-ish, we started putting into these into this new product. We hired new people to run the product and we thought, okay, this is going to go. You know, VR is going to be the thing. And it just didn't. And so all the companies that had signed up with us said, we're not going to go ahead with it. We're sorry. So we had sunk money into servers. We had burned through all our free credits also. We had burned all our reserve cash. And we hadn't focused on monetizing the community because we just thought we were going to go this direction. And so, you know, we were in a really bad position in 2017 post the VR crash, which is coming back to the Luxembourg issue, where, you know, we had amazing technology, we had great systems, we just didn't have customers, and we also had this amazing community that we had not monetized, and we had not created a business model around. Like our entire community for since 2012 till 2016 was literally free. Like we didn't charge for anything. So then from 2017 onwards, we started like reworking the app and putting in app purchases, running A/B tests. And by that time, our team had dwindled down, you know, lethargy had kind of set in. It was tough to motivate people at that point because they had seen it, like they had seen the struggles, you know. And so 2017 was where things kind of changed for us. You know, that phase was where I think a lot of our employees kind of bonded. We felt strong in the face of struggle. And we then got funding from UNICEF, which again came as a, like I told you, I was telling this to the customers, like every time we decide our company is going to die, somebody just comes and gives us free money.
UNICEF came and gave you money for what?
So we had built a open source project called Remix VR in our spare time. Okay. And UNICEF Innovation wanted to fund the companies that were building open source technologies in innovative directions like VR, drones, AR, Bitcoin, and all that stuff. Basically, innovative technologies so that all of these new technologies don't get stuck within these large companies and it's accessible to everybody.
Okay.
And so they gave us $100K to basically build that out. So I think on my LinkedIn profile, you'll see Remix VR. That's what it is.
I didn't, I don't think I did, but I see it on the website here, remixvr.org. Right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that helped you continue. Before
yes.
we continue with the story, at your height, what was the revenue? Can we talk about that?
At their height, I think it was 1.2.
1.2.
1.2.
So this is what, 2016?
2016.
Then you go to nothing from that.
Nothing.
You almost go out of business. Luxembourg gives you $100,000.
Yes.
Great. That gets you new life. You continue. You experiment a little bit. You end up with something called Remix VR. That gets you how much?
Yep.
Another 100 from UNICEF? So then UNICEF yes. gives you another lifeline. Meanwhile, you're pivoting your business and you end up with an app that anyone can use to create a 360 experience. And then
We always had that. We just never monetized it.
And then what year did you decide we're going to add upsell to this?
2017, when we were just...
2017, when yep. you needed the money, you did
it. We needed the money. We just,
why were you so big on Android, much bigger than you were on iOS?
I think it has to do mostly with we could never get... Well, two reasons. One is we had to build a better capture than the native iOS to succeed. So our capture has to be better than the iOS capture.
Because iOS comes with a panoramic view.
Yes.
But so, panoramic is different from 360. I could see the technology is very similar, right? But with 360, right. the idea is as you move around, you could see it.
Well, but it's the capture is the same. It's the, you know, it has to be that good. Like, you know, it has to be. So with the Android thing, we have kind of like, you know, it's a motion where you kind of stop, take a photo. It's all automatic, but it's not as panning the way mm-hmm. iOS has it. So if we had to attract a customer from iOS to use our app, that's the quality we had to hit to. And that's Apple. And it is inbuilt in their phone. So if you can't, you know, so it needed to be that good.
And it's still not the same, but I guess I get what you're saying. You're saying it's close enough that people aren't going to pay us $60 a year get this. All right. So that's how you built up on Android. And then last year, you had the most revenue from this. And that's when COVID hit.
Yep.
And that's when you realize, you know, I think there's another market for it. And the next market is virtual tours.
Yes.
I got really deep into 360 cameras for a while because I was running my marathons last year, 7 marathons, right. 7 continents. I got myself a 360 camera on a selfie stick that the camera disappears on. Insta360. Yep. That's a beautiful thing. It's amazing the way it does it. And then it allowed me, for example, to run holding this 360 camera. And it was like a drone shot of me running. A lot of times people have these drone shots or what look like drone shots or these follow cameras. It feels like someone's following you with a camera. Turns out it's just a 360 camera that they're just kind of holding or attaching to themselves. That's what I did. In order to learn how to do it, how to use it right, I looked on YouTube and I saw this whole community of people who do 360 photos, including this one guy, Ben. I forget his last name.
Ben Claremont.
Claremont, yeah, I love that guy from Australia. Yeah. He teaches people how to create these virtual tours, and he gets paid by offices to do this. And then he says you could get paid by real estate brokers to do their homes. And so this is what you're seeing. You're saying, look, no one needs to buy an Insta360 camera. They don't need to do all this other stuff. They don't need the pole. They don't need the expertise. Just use our app, and you'll get it. Put it on and you'll be able to sell. I'm pounding on the table, but that's it, right?
That's pretty much it, yep.
All right. And you got money in the bank now? I keep coming back to money. You do? No, you personally. Forget the company. You personally, you have enough? Yes.
I got enough, yeah. I got enough.
How's that not upsetting you? Don't you see all these people who are getting rich in Silicon Valley?
It doesn't upset me. I mean, it is a... I don't know. I've never been that kind of guy. I don't know. It's just never upsetted me.
And your vision is if you could just make this thing work well, help people, and then be able, do you still want to donate the money to charity?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are two things I want to do. One is maybe do something in cancer or something in that space. And then the other is climate stuff. So basically buy more Amazon forests.
And keep them from getting torn down. All right. What's the best thing for people to do if they want to follow up with you?
They can follow me on Twitter at Vineet Devaya.
That's probably the best thing. And then, of course, teleport. It's teleportme.com, right?
Right. Teleportme.com.
And in every, basically every software store, it's in there too. Android and iOS, right?
That's yes. Yes. The app is P360 if anybody wants to download it.
What's the, it's not, well, let me see. I got it right here. It's called, oh, you're right. It's called P360.
Yep.
Why isn't it called Teleport Me?
ASO, App Store Optimization, Search Optimization.
Oh, because you want, what's P360?
It was Panorama 360, that's what the keywords are.
Because people are searching for that. That's the keyword you want. You said, you know what? If we're going to really nail those keywords, we should just call our company. Got it. And that's why you were able to say with such confidence, Andrew, just search for Panorama 360 and you'll see us in the App Store. Got it. All right. Thank you so much for doing this interview. And now it's what? One? No, it's almost 2 o'clock your time, isn't it?
Shit, it is 2 o'clock. You're right.
Dude. 2 a.m. for everyone who's listening. Thank you so much for staying up late.
Hey, man, no problem, man.
You bet. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Right. Bye. See ya. Do we stop?